episode 103 of Positive Progression, a Motorsports Analytics Podcast. I'm Alan Cavana, joined as always by David Smith. On this episode, ranking the championship favorites halfway through the regular season, who's in, who's out, and who we agree on, plus our extensive Circuit of the Americas preview, including a look at the top drivers lacking that road course ability. Gotta pick it up there. But first, as part of our new tradition, David, we start with a historical deep dive, this time looking at Texas World Speedway. David, since we're going to a new Texas track for the NASCAR series, I found it appropriate we look back on an old Texas track. Texas World Speedway was a 2-mile track nearly identical to the Michigan we know today. The Cup Series raced there just 8 times and never returned after 1981. Davis, you'll tell us all about it, but I can tell you one cool thing I saw. Every race there was won by a future NASCAR Hall of Famer. That's a pretty neat distinction.
Yeah, and I think that there's a reason for that distinction. So, firstly, it was on the Cup Series schedule, as you mentioned, not a lot. From 1969 to 73, there was a 5-year hiatus, and then it was on the schedule from 79 until 81. As you said, 2-mile track, similar to Michigan. It was capable of higher speeds, though. It was a total horsepower track. No surprise by this winner's list. It is a who's who, but also it is a list of haves within the sport. Great teams with plenty of horsepower there. Unfortunately for this racetrack, it never drew a fan following. There were only 24,000 people in attendance for the first ever Cup race there in 1969. There were 18,000 for the second race. And even after the 5-year hatiatus, there's a groundswell to get a race back on the Cup Series calendar. Only 11,000 people showed up to that. And honestly, I think it's just an absence of a stock car racing culture in the state of Texas. At least that's what I would chalk it up to. Texas is a tough nut to crack traditionally when it comes to racing. AJ Foyt's popularity fostered no local community to speak of. And I'm glad that you picked this as our topic today. For me personally, Alan, when I got hired by The Athletic, I left RSMG, which is the last agency, that I was with as a talent scout. And, I haven't scouted since, but one of the big regrets that I have is that I never built a firm scouting network of folks that I trusted inside the state of Texas. And I didn't gain any, some sort of a next level understanding of the driving talent in that state. And you figure that with the population size, there's at least one stud race car driver inside the state of Texas. And I guess with the population size, you also figure there are a lot of fans there too. But if there are, they don't seem to attend races in droves. Something I lament about the state of Texas. But this racetrack did have a comeback I think that you'll find fascinating. In the late aughts, the NASCAR testing ban made Texas World Speedway appealing to Cup Series teams. Greg Biffle set a record unofficially, turned an average lap speed of 218 around the track. The track itself was used for research and development for Michigan and Fontana. And at the time, both of those tracks had 2 races on the Cup Series schedule. And I do recall I was working hand in hand with Steve Turner and Turner Motorsports at the time, and they were a Texas-based team. They tested their trucks there frequently. And I recall they won back-to-back Michigan races with Nelson Piquet Jr. and then James Buescher, thanks to a lot of time spent at Texas World.
Good stuff, and a good tie-in to more recent history that I didn't know about. I knew the Biffle stuff, but that's I didn't know how extensive the testing went there. Yes, David, we're talking about a track in College Station, home of Texas A&M, and I believe a track that is no longer there officially, right? It's going to be demolished, or if it has been demolished, or it's going to be homes or shopping centers soon, I believe. One of the things that I liked about it, David, just looking back on the history of it, there can't be that many of these tracks, David. One of the few tracks out there that both Richard Petty and AJ Foyt can say they were winners. And I just thought that is a cool distinction.
Yeah, indeed. AJ Foyt, a winner. That was a USAC stock car race, different series than NASCAR. But you're right. And it's just a great point to make that it was one of these tracks. And there are several out there, where it's really tough to just fall backwards into a race win. And from the seams of things, this was one of those tracks. You had to have either the talent or the car capable to go out and win these races. It's tough. I need to drum up, some videos of past races if there are any. And take a look at myself. I didn't really have a familiarity with this track. I was born after, the Cup Series stopped going there. And it wasn't until NASCAR's testing ban made all of these alternative racetracks without a presence on the NASCAR schedule, made them popular. I remember, an ESPN, the magazine article about Rockingham. Its resurgence was due to the fact that teams were testing at both Rockingham and the small half mile track outside of it called Little Rock, which was to mimic Martinsville. It was a big deal and it was big business that some of these independent track owners were making. That is no longer the case, and that's partially why Texas World now ceases to exist.
All right, good stuff. Our historical deep dive for episode 103 of Positive Regression goes toward Texas World Speedway. Good stuff as always, David. Let's get this started. All right, we are halfway through the NASCAR Cup Series regular season, right? 13 races down, 13 more to go before the playoffs start, so it's natural we will rank our top five serious title contenders right now. David, as you write, the rankings are subjective. The rationale is objective. So we might have some differences, but we'll talk it out. That's what we do here on the podcast. Maybe elicit some more conversation from the listeners as well. So how do you want to do it, Dave? Want to each give our rankings? And I can give my five if you want.
Okay, yeah. And I do want to preface this by saying that we don't know who the other pick.
No,
there is no artifice here. I've got a notepad. I'm ready to write down whatever Alan comes up with, and debate will very likely ensue.
Sure. All right. Well, I'll go first. I'll start at number five and work my way up to one. So at number five for serious title contenders right now, I have Joey Logano. Joey Logano has been consistent, evidenced by where he is in points right now. I know Darlington was something of an oddball, but David, a lot of my rationale is going to come back to the 750 tracks. You look at Phoenix, Richmond, Dover, he won Bristol Dirt, Martinsville, all good performances that to me puts Joey Logano as a serious title contender for me at number five. Number four, I have Alex Bowman. Where are his two wins, right? I mean, you have Dover, a 750 track. You have Richmond, a 750 track. If he keeps getting better, serious title contender. Number three for me is Kyle Larson. I know he tops the speed charts on the 550 tracks, but he's doing plenty at the other tracks as well. If he starts pulling off these wins, I just think, look, Kyle Larson, his talent, and Hendrick Motorsports Equipment, he is number three. Denny Hamlin, for me, comes in at number two as a serious title contender. We've covered him extensively on the podcast in the first half of this year so far. Just killing it out there at a historical pace at some points in terms of performance, in terms of production. I know the wins aren't there, but when you're performing at this level, if you've listened to any words that we have said, you know Denny Hamlin is obviously a serious title contender. And David, my number one serious title contender right now, the favorite for me, Martin Truex Jr. You cannot argue with the high. I know there are some dips, but you cannot argue with the highs where the wins are, right? The wins at these 750 tracks, these playoff tracks that they're all going to go back to, Darlington, Phoenix, Martinsville. He has victories there. Victories are how you win a championship. It's not just performance. So David, he is my favorite for the championship. How about you?
Okay, so that's a very interesting list. We share three of the five.
Ooh, nice. All right.
And I think we're going to go, I think our rationale is similar. We just took different pathways to get there. I'll just read, the list outright. Number five, I have Chase Elliott.
Okay.
Number four, Joey Logano. Number three for me is Ryan Blaney.
Wow.
Two and one, I really anguished over this. So much so it was the kind of anguish that I had to like move locations in my house because I needed to have more of a deep think.
Don't stress, man. It's just a podcast.
It's kind of a 1A, 1B, but that's a cop out, right? So it is one and two. Number two is Denny Hamlin and number one is Martin Truex.
All right.
So, let's let's start at the top, because we have a unanimous number one.
Yes, we both agree on one and two.
Yeah. So, okay. We can let's dive into both of those. Jeff Gordon said on the Fox telecast last week that he was shocked that Truex did not perform better at Dover, that he didn't dominate, and especially as the pole sitter. But to me, I would not have expected that, because from the outside looking in, there is little upside in spending the time it takes, the time that it is required on a setup that could have a race like that, that we saw eventually saw from Hendrick Motorsports. It appears, and I'm basing this on some of the questions that I've asked of James Small in a few different media availabilities and the answers that he's given me, but it sounds as if this team has identified where precisely at 750 horsepower they want to be good. And you mentioned the tracks that they've won at. They won at Phoenix and they won at Martinsville. And those wins by themselves are big statements. It sort of provides them a pathway from the beginning of the playoffs to the championship. Okay. The one race that they have outright dominated this year was Darlington, and that is the playoff opener. So round one, I can chart Truex's playoff progression as a win at Darlington. Stage two is sort of a kitchen sink round. I think that is where you use the regular season to amass playoff points, in the hopes that you can use them if you do not get a win. I don't see a track there that necessarily pops out. It's possible. He is Martin Truex, but I think that round specifically is why you accumulate playoff points. Round number three, I think it's clear they will have playoff points. The goal is to win Martinsville. And while that was not an outright domination, we've seen Truex do that in the past. We see cars that have a knack to dominate. And I think that is the end game with that. And then the finale is at Phoenix. And again, they didn't outright dominate that race, but it was the fastest car of the last stage. That should have some significance. And I think that's kind of the leg up that he has on Denny Hamlin. And if you'll grant me this, Hamlin went out and crushed Martinsville and Richmond. He did not win those races, but the way that he took to those tracks was a way that we haven't seen from him in a while. Last year they won races, but they also had a tendency, even in those races, to be spot on for two out of three stages of each race. And then that third stage, whether it was beginning, middle, or end, something went wonky. So in one way, they've corrected a big problem, but where I come to a stop and where I think Truex separates from Denny Hamlin is Phoenix. Mm-hmm. It's a track. Right now, no one has a seismic advantage at Phoenix. That didn't used to be the case. Kevin Harvick built a firewall around Phoenix there for years. But since it was made the host of the championship race, it's garnered all of this additional specific focus, R&D time spent, money spent, and this is kind of what you see. We have guys that can go out and lead a lot of laps, but there's also a lot of parity. The championship race last fall was much tighter. Denny Hamlin didn't lead a single lap, but he was in contention all day long. It is a harder track to dominate. And for me, if I had to pick between him and Truex, who is the most likely to go out and smash Phoenix, which I think you would need to at least have a car capable of doing that at some point in a race. I think it's the 19 team. Given what we saw there in that final stage earlier this year, and assuming that James Small comes correct instead of working through those initial runs and the competition yellows, that's the advantage. It's a small advantage, but that's the advantage.
Is it safe to say, I mean, winning Phoenix, that's how you win a championship, right? So that mere fact, right, that detail may cloud a lot of our judgments or rationales. Is that fair to say? Because it certainly did mine.
This is the game, right? Because we're no longer rewarding the best all-around team. and we are no longer rewarding, or we never really did reward the teams that win the most races. We reward the teams that win a competition where 10 tracks are prioritized over the rest in some kind of order. So when we talk, we spent a lot of time talking about Martinsville. We spent a lot of time talking about Phoenix. It's because those are the two most prominent racetracks on the schedule as it is constructed currently by NASCAR. So that is the competition. And if you are not hip to what that is, that's, you're going to have a lot of trouble. And if you are just flat out not good, and this is the reason that I left Kyle Larson off of my list altogether, if you're not good at those tracks, then no, you're not a serious title contender. Not until you clean that up. So the fact that Martin Truex had never won at Phoenix until earlier this year, and then we come to find out that James Small and Jeff Curtis and everyone at JGR spent the entire offseason, starting in November, building a setup specifically for Phoenix, that's the kind of focus that you're going to have as long as Phoenix is the final race on the schedule. And if you don't have the driver or you don't have the team capable of pulling off that race, then how real of a title contender are you? Because I think the conversation, I don't know if it starts there, but it certainly ends there. If you can't win at Phoenix, then you aren't a true title contender.
All right. That's fair. But I mean, remember, four title contenders also go there, which is why I have Larson, if you will, right? I mean, there's Martinsville, Kansas, and Texas. That those wins get you into Phoenix. So let's detail, David, our differences, right? You have Chase Elliott and Ryan Blaney in your top five for serious title contenders. I do not. I have Alex Bowman and Kyle Larson. So let's debate, I don't know, or give our reasons, you know, why for me, what makes Blaney in your top five, especially at number three? Because you have him right behind Denny and Martin Truex Jr., who we both agree are the favorites.
To me, Ryan Blaney represents the hedge on 557-50 for Team Penske. So his lone win this year came at Atlanta. Mm-hmm. He will have similar cracks at that going into Kansas and Texas. I mean, if he's not competitive, I would be surprised. It's crazy that he has not won Martinsville yet. So in that sense, you talk about you think Larson can be one of the final four. I think that's the case, but we're not picking the final four. We're picking championship contenders. And I think Blaney has a leg up because not only can he count off all three of the tracks in the semifinal round, he can go to Phoenix. He was competitive last fall. He led there this spring. It's possible. I mean, as we've seen from Team Penske, they can bring fast 750 cars to tracks that matter. Right now, he seems to be the best of both worlds as far as representatives from Team Penske go.
All right, and that's fair. And everything you just said, I could almost say for Kyle Larson. At least that's the rationale I used, right? When you talk about the hedge between 750 speed, like let's say we saw something in Dover, and the 550 speed that we know Kyle Larson has, you know, we know how he dominated Atlanta, but lost out to Ryan Blaney, obviously, but how he went out and won Vegas and how he's led a ton of laps. That's kind of the same rationale I used about the semifinal round, right? Texas, Kansas. He goes and wins one of those races. He's in the final four. To me, that obviously makes him something of a championship contender, to use, some of that 750 hedge, if you will. So that's why I have Larson over Blaney. You included Chase Elliott. And to me, it's crazy that, you know, we can only pick five. And when I made my list, I put Bowman over Chase Elliott because of what we've seen so far, for the ability to get checkered flags. Because checkered flags, so far, I mean, win you championships, right? And he has those 750 horsepower checkered flags. So right now, I put Alex Bowman in my top five. Talk me out of that. Put Chase Elliott, give me the argument for Chase Elliott over Alex Bowman.
We haven't seen the real Chase Elliott is the crux of my argument. He ranks fourth in 750 horsepower best average lap time. He ranks seventh in median. So there's a gap there. He is faster than he's led on, and the results probably should also be there. Keep in mind, he came out hot last season, and specifically it was speed on 750 tracks that we talked about in regards to him. Well, some of those tracks, like the Bristol pavement race was not there this spring. And that's a track that he won at for the All-Star race last year. That's typically a Chase Elliott track that probably would have been a good benchmark for where he is, and we didn't see it. I would contend that he isn't good at Richmond. He finished fifth there last fall, but it was a meh performance. He didn't lead any laps. He finished 11th or 12th there in the spring. I don't think anyone was expecting a big performance from him. And he was there at Martinsville, finished second, really should have finished third, but it took Martin Truex about 20 minutes to pass Denny Hamlin. so he kind of roped both of those guys in. And even in Phoenix, he was fighting a handling balance all day. I believe he started from the rear of the field, but it doesn't, it's, that's neither here nor there. He has the capability that we've seen, if they find balance, that he can get quite a lot done. I think last weekend's race at Dover was a pretty significant reminder of that. Someone asked in the Motorsports Analytics Discord chat before the race about Elliott being dinged in the optical scanning station again, starting from the rear. And I said, this, not only is it not going to be a problem, he's going to have a banner passing day, and he's going to score points from the first stage. Just watch. And that's exactly what he did. And that is what Chase Elliott brings. I don't think they make those aggressive calls in the scanning station without that knowledge. So if that were to get cleaned up, knowing the ability that he has, I think he's the driver of the Hendrick Four based on what the playoffs are. Kyle Larson might win more races this year. Chase Elliott has the highest ceiling. And if I'm on another team, if I'm at JGR or Penske, really looking at the playoff format, am I concerned with Kyle Larson, who has already admitted that Martinsville is his least favorite track and his Phoenix record isn't great? Chase Elliott can do that because we have seen it. So that's, even at number five, I might have him too low, but
wow,
he'll very likely pad his way into the playoffs if he doesn't win. I think he will win. We've got, you know, 12 road course races on the regular season schedule. So he'll pad his way in. He'll be in the mix. So I can't write him off just given that the championship he won last year, how it played out is on the table this year. There were no races swapped. He should fare very well, I think.
All right. And, let's just devote a little time to Logano, because we both had him on our lists. I don't want to say we forget about him, but it's almost a, I don't know. He's just so damn talented. You know, he gets the wins when needed, and he's there. You know, he's buzzing like a gnat, right? That you can't ignore him and his potential championship abilities.
There is no pattern to what he does or what his performance is. You can point to certain places and say that, well, Logano has won here, but would he be an outright favorite at any track on the schedule right now? I don't think so. But it's also that kind of ability to hang around. If you get him clean air anywhere, he's very difficult to beat. And we've talked about the 750 production prowess. He won Bristol of all places and still is getting results at other 750 tracks. The Daytona Road Course, he pulled one out of his nether regions. And I mean, he has the ability to go get a result. And now that he has a win, he can shortly start to amass some playoff points, but he's someone that, looking at every racetrack in the playoffs, including that round two that ends with the Roval, well, he nearly won the Roval race last year. And I recall we talked about that before the Roval race, that his road course record wasn't particularly good. And since then, he performed well at the Roval. He was a podium finisher at the Daytona Road Course. He was at both the Clash and the points race. So he does. He kind of pops up, and he led the most laps at Phoenix in the spring. So if he's in the final four, that's going to be a difficult driver to beat, because yeah, he is very tough to lose, to get rid of. I mean, when you think of like what the playoff is, ultimately you don't have to be the best car until, or the best driver until the final race. you can just not be the last cutoff driver for three rounds and get through. And Joey Logano has a pretty solid knack for not being the cutoff driver. Is there anybody that we left off completely that we should discuss?
Well, I mean, there's certainly plenty of reason for Kevin Harvick fans to be yelling. And look, it's a top five. So if you're six on the list, that's not bad. Do you think we've seen, like you said with Chase Elliott, have we seen Chase Elliott's potential quite yet, the real Chase Elliott? Have we seen Kevin Harvick's potential yet? I mean, it's a long season, right? There's 13 more races. You just got to get it figured out in the next 4 months or so. Don't you envision Rodney Childers, SHR, could do that, right? I mean, we can't write Kevin Harvick off. I mean, him finishing sixth each week is not a bad thing. It's just not Kevin Harvick's standard. So it's not like they're running piss poor. They're just not, they're not up there leading the laps, obviously, but you know, finishing, you know, sixth, seventh, or in the back half of the top 10 is not awful. That seems fixable to me. So, would it surprise you if he suddenly gets the win and becomes a championship contender? It would not surprise me, David.
I mean, he's my pick to win Michigan right now. I can say
exactly.
That.
But
even looking at where his team ranks in speed, it's the 11th fastest team on 550 tracks. It's the 7th fastest on 750 tracks. Just, you know, lumping all these tracks into two different categories, that's not enough. It isn't enough. Because as the playoffs thin out, it really, that's when we see the weaknesses, right? Like there's a reason that we do our requiems at the end of every season where we point to the thing that needs to be improved on. And Alan, we've done it for 2 years now. We're going to do it a third this year, but it gets harder and harder to find weaknesses within a team. And theirs last year was, there was kind of a gap to where, what they were doing on the 550s and what they were doing on the 750s. The tracks that were most prominent on the NASCAR schedule, they didn't seem to have a handle on. And that was not a hot take. Kevin Harvick got out of the car at Martinsville and said, we're always bad here. Well, if you know you're always bad there, why didn't you do anything about it? So it shouldn't have. He had a really weird semifinal round, sort of fluky, but at the same time, you have to have every fail safe. And I feel like the five drivers that I put on my list have kind of every fail safe checked off. And we still haven't seen that from Harvick yet this year. He might go get finishes, but when it comes down to it, this comes down to having speed and having track position, and they've had neither. So until that changes, and we might not see it because we're not going to see any of these tracks again that we saw earlier this year until the playoffs, I don't know. That's a very difficult pick. I think he'll be in the playoffs. That's for sure. How long he stays in it is another question.
All right. Any other dark horse you want to throw out? I mean, picking a title contender, there's no, I don't think there's any such thing as a dark horse title contender. No one's going to surprise us and win a Cup Series championship. But for me, I mean, Bowman would have been my deepest, darkest, if you will, deep dive, if you will, into a championship pick. Anyone else you want to throw out? We didn't mention Byron. I mean, we've mentioned every other Hendrick driver.
We did not rank the fastest team in the series in either of our top fives, and that's William Byron. But what have we learned in past years is that, again, the playoffs don't reward what you think it's rewarding. And with William, it's not, he has a high floor, man. If he has proven anything this year, is that he is the only driver to have a PR of 3 or higher in races without late race restarts, races with late race restarts, 550 tracks and 750 tracks. He has his bases covered. What he isn't doing is winning all of these races. He might end the season having maybe the best PR in the series, but until we see that ceiling grow within the year 2021 to where he can just go out, kill off a race and win, then I don't know that he's in that conversation. Now, a lot of things can happen between now and then. In speaking with Greg Ives last week, he discussed his team's Martinsville speed. I mean, even the pit crew then had a big performance, 14 spots gained at Martinsville. And Greg Ives thought that they had enough speed to be able to win the race outright. And I put this in my article. I did not editorialize, but I kind of disagree with that. Just based on what the data was telling me, you know how the Washington Post has a Pinocchio system for how the degree of a lie? This wasn't a 4 Pinocchio. This was maybe a 1 Pinocchio. But it was the 7th fastest car at Martinsville, but Phoenix was the big problem. And Ives' admission, that's the track that they're really bad at. They are frustrated and they're trying to figure it out. So with him, with Byron, they are these two Hendrick teams that can win races because we've seen them win races, but is the ceiling so high as to refer to them as a versatile enough title contender? Like, is William Byron a good candidate to not win any of the races in the semifinal round, but point his way into the finale? Absolutely. I mean, if there's anybody on this list, it might be him, but
it has to have, well, I mean, at least one makes it that way, right? At least one makes it that way.
But can he win? Can he go out and win Phoenix? And that's what I keep coming back to, is not only does that separate first and second on this list for me, but it leaves some drivers off, even though they're poised to have tremendous seasons. That's not how this championship is rewarded. You have to play the game if you want to win the championship, and some of these teams play it far better than others.
Good discussion. Maybe we'll revisit when we get back to Phoenix, at least remember what we said 13 weeks into the season, 13 races into the season. I think it was a pretty good in-depth discussion with good arguments made for all around. So good stuff, David. All right, let's move on. We are going to COTA, David. The Circuit of the Americas, a new venue on the NASCAR Series track, Cup Series track. I mean, all three of them are going there, but it's been a long time since we could say something as significant as a new world-class F1 Circuit of the Americas track being on the schedule. 20 different turns. I mean, I'm excited. I mean, just for the venue, for the unknowns of it all. They'll have practice. They'll have qualifying. David, I mean, just having a new track on the schedule, that just is fun to me. Gives us something to talk about.
It does. It does not amaze me that there is a truck series race at an F1 track. I cannot, I can't, this could not have been further from what was imagined with this track.
Yeah, Paul Menard will race on Saturday in the Truck Series. So who saw that coming? But hey, it's a year of change, 2021. But David, let's talk the Cup Series. Similar rules package, right? I mean, 750 horsepower at a road course. We've seen a bunch of 750 horsepower races so far this season. We dissect them. We tell you which drivers are good at them, right? Which drivers are fast, which teams are excelling at 750 horsepower tracks. But this is a road course, right? This is a new road course. It is a certainly a unique road course. So should we, if we look at the speed charts, let's say, David, should we expect 750 horsepower strength? If we're looking at who's fast on the charts, should that translate to a road course that does have the 750 horsepower package?
The answer is that it could, and it's going to be dependent on every type of road course because they're all unique. You can't compare Sonoma to Watkins Glen to COTA. So in parts and pieces, yes, being good at 750 ovals translates to being good at road courses. And those elements, the aero, the grip, every central focus of a baseline 750 setup matter, but at COTA specifically, looking at the track map, they're going to matter a lot because of what COTA offers. There are two monster straightaways, and that is something that we don't see at Sonoma or Watkins Glen. So straight line speed will absolutely matter. And then there is the braking, because all that straight line speed is going to come to a screeching halt. Make all the left-hand turn jokes about NASCAR, but if you're bad at turning left, then you're going to be bad at COTA, because turns 1, 11, 12, 19, and 20 are all big left-handers with heavy braking zones, and turn 20 leads into the start-finish line. So that is a crucial braking zone where the timing and the magnitude of the launch on exit will matter. So yes, if a team or driver are particularly good at 750 horsepower tracks, they'd be ecstatic going into this weekend. Of course, there are other details to account for, including right-hand turns, but if the foundation is there, then that's a tremendous advantage.
All right. Fair enough. I appreciate that. So we look at the drivers, right? I think everybody, even before the season started, right, you put two names on top, Chase Elliott and Martin Truex Jr., for all the road courses and for very good reason. Just go look at the records. They are the favorites. I would expect them to still be the favorites. So let's go one tier below, David. I was asking you who might be number three. If we just crown them, you know, want to crown them, we'll crown them. They are who we thought they are, Truex and Elliott. But after Truex and Elliott, who should we consider an all-around good road racer? Who may be right up there contending with the 9 and the 19?
Well, Dennis Green, I would say Joey Logano emerged at the Daytona Road Course. Talked about this earlier, podium finishes in both the Clash and the points race. We don't really think about the Clash as anything meaningful, but perhaps we should. That is a stadium road course, Daytona. Very flat, no elevation. Different beast than what we're going to see this weekend. The same thing can be said for Denny Hamlin, too. Certainly viable on road courses without elevation. But I said it before, I will say it again, William Byron has the road course chops. Ranks third in surplus passing value on road courses dating back to 2019. He's been doing this, front row starts for all three of the road course races in 2019. This year, unlike those other years, he has the fastest car in the series, that foundational speed on which to build. So he's right there. I would make him my contrarian pick, but you would probably poo-poo that. But mm-hmm. I think if we were making a ranking or a tier system, he for me is either in that second tier or he's a tweener and will not break into the Elliott Truex tier until he wins, which I still feel a win is a coming this year on a road course for William Byron.
All right, we'll see who you pick. I think that's fair. I'm only setting myself up because I don't know if I picked a contrarian either, but we'll get to that. Don't worry. So second tier or close to first tier, will he be? I like that. Let's look at the other end, right? I mean, we spent much of the episode talking about championship contenders or most likely to win the championship. Any of those star drivers out there who just, whether on paper, catch the eye test, just lacking road course ability, or who may find themselves working a little harder this weekend. Who do you look at in terms of if you're describing someone like that?
Yeah, I'm looking at Kyle Larson. I'm thinking really? Kyle Larson is going to have a really bizarre summer because the schedule, if you look at it, it's all these big 550 tracks where we know Kyle Larson can show up, but also there's these road courses left on the schedule this year where Larson might have a serious problem. I mean, it's not that he's outright bad. He's made some inroads, but even this year, his worst outing in terms of surplus passing value was the Daytona road course race. And it's actually one of the two races this season that saw a negative pass differential from him. And it's sort of interesting. I don't know what the difference is. I don't know why he hasn't caught on, but there is a line of open wheel dirt guys who became good road course racers. And it dates all the way back to Tim Richman. Five of his 13 career Cup Series wins came on road courses. A couple decades or a decade later, it was Jeff Gordon and then Tony Stewart. Both of them considered some of NASCAR's best ever on road courses. Those are USAC dirt guys. What business do they have being good on road courses? So for whatever reason, that hasn't resonated with Larson in the same way, but I would submit that with the heightened number of road course events on the schedule, and it sounds as if there's going to be street courses and this is kind of the way forward, that's kind of the next thing for him to figure out to truly unlock what he is as an overall race car driver.
Interesting. That's a big name. I didn't know you were going to go that way. What about, Kevin Harvick? We going into the season, right? We talked a lot about SHR and worries about their struggles at the road courses. So I thought you were going to go there, not Kyle Larson. So that's interesting.
That one too. I mean, when we talk about Kevin Harvick's passing, his results, I mean, the Busch Clash earlier this year was not, very pretty. Neither was, last summer's Daytona race. But that's a stadium road course. I mean, he's won at road courses before. He is not hapless. He is one of the drivers running a BJ McLeod car in the Xfinity series, just trying to get some exposure. And I think that can certainly help. I've been hearing a lot of different drivers discuss the challenges that COTA is providing them. For one, Christopher Bell said that he is having a tough time memorizing the turns and the corners and understanding where he wants to brake. That's an issue. I'm sure that he'll figure it out, but it sounds as if even with all of the sim racing and everything that we have now in terms of data, drivers actually being on the racetrack physically and figuring it out, until they do that, they're uncomfortable. So Harvick actually, just for this weekend, I feel like he has a leg up getting some familiarity that he otherwise wouldn't have. But certainly you're right. That is an element of his driving repertoire that he needs to figure out too.
Yeah. And that's a great idea for them to be in that Xfinity series race, because there are 20 turns. It's a hell of a track. I can't wait to learn more about it. It's going to be cool. David, let's make our win picks. I'll just go first because I'm taking an obvious uncontested layup and going with Martin Truex Jr. I mean, look, he's got the speed. We know he has the ability, the history. What else can I say? Maybe one of the easiest win picks I'll do all season. So yeah, I'm taking the layup, taking the points, and going with Martin Truex Jr. How about you?
Okay. I'm taking Chase Elliott.
Boom, easy, right? I mean, we'll move on. Those are our win picks. As always, we also do contrarian performers, maybe someone that will surprise. And David, I was going to give you a pass if William Byron was going to be your contrarian pick, only because I'm picking Joey Logano. And is that too easy? Does he count as a contrarian performer? Look, he's been finished second in the past two road course races. And you even mentioned the class, which I forgot about. So second in points scored over the last four road course races. Yet, with all that said, David, I still don't think a lot of people associate Joey Logano with road course success. I certainly didn't. So for that reason, until I went did the deep dive and saw it, for that reason, not associating him with the road course success, I think that does make him a contrarian contender. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. I'm going with Joey Logano.
He has a win at Watkins Glen. I understand what you're saying, and I'll allow it to be a contrarian. I think Penske as a whole is kind of interesting when it comes to road course racing. I'd love to know how much of R&D is allocated and what the difference was between the previous years and this year when they're heavily populating the schedule. So what we see, I think, from Penske as a whole, I'm interested in learning, because, man, I don't know. There was maybe a year stretch where they were just kind of absent, mediocre, if you will, which all of them have. Like Ryan Blaney won a Roval race. Like all of them can do this. So seemingly should be good, but you're right. It's not an on-the-nose pick.
All right. How about your contrarian contender?
I'm going to go truly contrarian and say Chris Buescher.
Wow, the Texas boy.
I don't know does that matter? He considers Vegas Bullring his home track, I think. That was where he spent most of his time developing. But he's a sneaky good road course racer. Between 2019 and 2020, he netted a surplus 5 positions across all road course races. And at Daytona earlier this year, he netted out 6. And in regards to points, the 17 team is going for it. Crew chief Luke Lambert has ensured stage point positioning in each of the last two races. That's pretty big. So the strategy has been fair. 6 positions gained through green flag pit strategy on normal tracks. They lost 2 in the Daytona road course race. So we'll see. I guess that's my only hesitation. But Buescher and collectively as a team, I think that they'll need this race to balance in their favor, because it is, for all intents and purposes, a toss-up race and a race where some deliberate focus could grant you a big day. And right now, I think this is a team capable of making the playoffs. I don't think they can win a race straight up, but it's possible to pad enough points to get into the playoffs. And if they ignore road courses, then that's just not going to happen. Forget that. They're not going to 550 their way into the playoffs. They need something else, and that something else starts this weekend at COTA.
Yeah, one of those bubble line teams, if you will. I mean, they're going to hit it, right? Someone will take advantage of the five road courses you have left in the next 13 races, and that will propel them into a playoff spot. So perhaps it starts this weekend with Chris Buescher. All right, good stuff, David. Good episode. We don't forget, we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Luminary, TuneIn, and YouTube. We are available no matter your device. Our entire back catalog of episodes is available for free at posregpod.com. If you like what you're hearing, please leave us a rating or a review. That stuff helps spread the word about this podcast, spread the gospel. We notice, and it is, of course, appreciated. If you have any questions, we'd love to hear them. We'd love to answer them. We did a whole 2 episodes about it. Go back and listen. Reach out on Twitter at PosregPod, PosregPod. David, you are always working hard. What do you got this week?
Writing for NBC Sports, as always, this week, Thursdays and race days. And if you want those articles emailed directly to you, then please send me your email address to motorsportsanalytics@gmail.com. I know there are other NASCAR newsletters that you can subscribe to, and why not? But I promise mine will make you smarter. At least that's the goal.
Absolutely. All right. Good stuff there. David, after you listen, and all our listeners, after you listen to this podcast, go check out my Twitter feed at Alan Kavana and check out my latest video for Speed Sport. It helps get you ready for the weekend in the racing world beyond NASCAR. We'll go all over the world, preview what's going on this weekend. So I'd appreciate if you watch that. Let me know if you like those, because I'm trying to refine that, all that stuff for Speed Sport, and it comes out. Hopefully it's really good. And David, I'm happy to say, that I will be at Circuit of the Americas. I will be in pit road for the Performance Racing Network on your radio, in your headsets, for the broadcast, making my debut on radio. And it is such an honor. It is such a cool opportunity. I'm a little bit nervous, but I'm so excited to get back at the track and work with some really awesome people. So yeah, I will be doing the Xfinity and Cup races at Circuit of the Americas. And it just sounds so cool to say. So I hope you tune in and listen.
Such a relief. I hope you're bringing your skinny jeans to fit in with the folks at Austin. But I would recommend, if you're, you know, watching at home, tune up, NASCAR.com and click listen to live radio so you can hear Alan Kavana help call the race. That should be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And thank you as always, everybody, for listening to this podcast. Hope you're getting the most out of it. Oh, and don't forget, Fantasy Live, your fantasy team on NASCAR.com. I'm busy week for me, David. I apologize. But yeah, set that lineup. Don't forget. And there's qualifying and practice this week. So make sure you factor all that in to your fantasy lineups. So don't worry. We got you covered. Just follow me on Twitter. But for David Smith, I'm Alan Kavana. This has been episode 103 of Positive Regression. We'll see you next week.